Good morning. This is James Stephenson in the NBC newsroom in New York with the news from around the world and calling in NBC's overseas observers. Allied armies are smashing eastward along the entire western front today. In the north, the British Second Army has pushed over 10 miles, crossed another river barrier, and taken the key superhighway leading to northern Holland. The American 9th is approaching Essen, the great Ruhr munition center. Farther south, the American 1st is driven forward along the entire length of its Remagen bridgehead. And the Third Army, operating under a partial news blackout, has smashed over 40 miles beyond the east bank of the Rhine. On the eastern front, two Russian armies are driving along the Danube River toward Vienna. Advanced forces are now only 77 miles from the Austrian capital. In the north, mopping up operations continue while preparations for the big drive to Berlin are proceeding in the central sector despite an early spring thaw which has turned the ground into mud. In the Pacific, the Tokyo radio claims that American naval forces are attempting an invasion of the Okinawa group of the Ryukyu chain of islands. According to the Jap reports, the action is in an area only 325 miles from the Japanese mainland. There is no confirmation from American fleet headquarters. And now a few words from your announcer.
How long is it since you've written him a letter? You know whom I mean, that fighting man of yours overseas. Did you write yesterday, or is it several days since your last letter? If it is several days, the reason probably is that you just don't have enough time to sit down and write a long letter very often. But why a long letter? You know, it takes just a few minutes to write a V-mail note, such a few minutes that you can easily find time to write one every day. And how much better for him to receive frequent and short letters than long, infrequent ones. Frequent letters remind him of the fact that everyone at home is thinking of him and misses him. A lot of people have the V-mail habit, so why don't you try it? Remember, V-mail forms are on sale at most stationers or free at local post offices. And now here's James Stephenson and your World News Roundup.
An unconfirmed report from neutral sources says that Adolf Hitler has called an emergency meeting of all Nazi high leaders at Berchtesgaden tonight. Although the story must be classified as rumor, nevertheless, it does seem reasonable that the Führer now must feel that the time has come to talk about the immediate defense of southern Germany. Heretofore, the Nazis' great problem was to hold off the threats to Berlin, the Ruhr, and the northern parts of the Reich. But in light of recent developments, the entire German plan of defense may have to be abandoned. The military picture has changed so rapidly in the past few days that the German leaders may be compelled to move much faster than they had thought in order to save what remains of their hopeless situation. General Patton's American Third Army on the southern sector of the Western Front has struck with lightning speed and tremendous power in a drive which has already gained over 40 miles east of the Rhine. Although there is a news blackout of Patton's operations, a glance at the map shows the strategic possibilities of his position. He can continue to move east for another 50 to 75 miles, which would place him at Nuremberg. Then, by quickly wheeling to the south, he could head right for Munich and the heart of southern Germany. Meanwhile, the two great Russian armies, which are now moving along the Danube heading for Vienna, could strike due east and form a junction with the American Third Army, thus sealing off southern Germany and cutting the Reich in two. The pattern of this strategy has been thoroughly studied by military experts. It has been believed that the plan would eventually be worked out by the Allies, and the sensational military developments of the past few days indicate that the time has arrived. Perhaps that's the reason Hitler has called his emergency meeting. He must move fast now if he would try to delay the end of the war. If and when Patton crashes through to Munich and the Russians join him in southern Germany, the war will be over. Its end will come much more quickly than even the most optimistic Allied leaders have hoped for. We had hoped at this time to bring you a broadcast directly from the Western Front, but the broadcast signal is not good this morning. Here is the news from the Western Front as we have it in the NBC newsroom in New York at this moment. The American Third Army closed within 6 miles of Frankfurt on the Main today and sent its tanks racing through broken German lines on the flat central German plains within 250 miles of Russian lines. The First Army to the north exploited another breakthrough of weakening German defenses comparable to the victory at Saint-Lô and advanced 3 miles nearer Berlin overnight from the Remagen-Bonn sector. The American Ninth Army advanced 5 miles deeper into the rubble heap of the Ruhr past outflanked Duisburg, deepening its lower Rhine front to at least 10 miles. The British Second Army, with at least one famous Canadian division, pushed 10 miles east of the Rhine on the flat Westphalian plains. The Ninth Army's 30th Infantry Division is nearing a superhighway to Berlin, where it swings 8 miles east of the Rhine, a mile northeast of Bruckhausen. field officers said the 30th had broken into the open country of the northern Ruhr. Enemy resistance was described as completely disintegrated. Allied airmen said German armored forces in the path of Lieutenant General William H. Simpson's 9th Army troops were milling about in a state of confusion. More than 80 miles of the Rhine, East Rhine banks, I should say, are now firmly in Allied hands, and the final campaign to crush Germany is rolling up massive victories all the way from Wesel to below Frankfurt. Nowhere has the bewildered and severely bled Wehrmacht been able to check the mighty tide of more than 1,250,000 shock troops, which General Eisenhower had massed on the Western Front for the final battle. Lieutenant General George S. Patton's Third Army made new crossings of the Upper Rhine, which gave him a total of 7 bridgeheads. The main river, or I should say the Main River, which flows through Frankfurt, was crossed on a captured bridge at Aschaffenburg and reached at 2 other points, 8 miles southwest of Frankfurt and 2 miles east of Mainz. The 4 Allied armies are ripping German defenses apart in an end-the-war offensive. Here's a news report from London. General Eisenhower's Great Rhine Offensive has plunged the German people into the deepest gloom, dispatches from neutral European capitals said today. But there seemed general agreement that it still is too early to look for a complete collapse of the German home front. Advices from Bern said the comparative ease with which the Allied army swept across the Rhine had started the greatest wave of defeatism and despair yet recorded in Germany. These dispatches emphasized, however, that even though the German people apparently have lost all hope, their fear of the Gestapo still is so great that any immediate uprising to oust the Nazis and bring a quick peace seems unlikely. At this time, we take you to NBC in the Pacific.
This is Pat Flaherty speaking from the war-torn city of Manila. The tragic fate of the little town of Bawang on Batangas Bay, southwest of Manila, has just come to light. It is another chapter in the volume on Japanese barbarism. On the morning of February 28th, with the 158th Regimental Combat Team advancing on the town, the Jap garrison commander issued a military order of assembly for the citizens of the town. Through a large part of the morning, the people trooped to the town cathedral. A few escaped to the hills. The women and small children were separated and marched into a nearby school building. The men and boys were herded into a larger building across from the church. The Jap demolition squad went to work on this building. It crumbled under a violent blast. It was instant death for most all inside. Only a handful miraculously escaped death. Meanwhile, with the sound of the explosion, there was panic among the women and children. They sensed the fate of their menfolk. 200 of them lay dying only 3 blocks away. There was a wild stampede from the building. They fled to safety in the nearby hills. Strangely, the school building was not guarded by the Japs, but this was explained quickly. At that very moment, the Japs were applying the torch to the town, spraying gasoline on the houses and setting them afire. Many bedfast invalids suffered a fiery death. Darkness found the sky red with fire over Bawang. The troops of the 158th Regimental Combat Team arrived on the scene, and under their protection, the women came to search for their loved ones among the dead. Most of them found only ashes. It has been written, "There is a destiny which makes us all brothers." I wonder where the Japs were when the membership cards were handed out. Pat Flaherty speaking from Manila. I return you to NBC in New York.
We have cleared our signal to the Western Front, so at this time we go to NBC on the Western Front.
This is Ed Hawker on the Western Front. The only way forward on the U.S. 7th Army Front this morning lies across the River Rhine. With few exceptions, enemy pockets of resistance have been cleared, and the divisions under the command of General Patch stand along the west bank, southward from the 3rd Army sector almost to the borders of Switzerland. It's only a matter of time before the enveloping grand finale push presents a solid front from Switzerland all the way north to the Netherlands. And what's more, the enemy knows it. During the past 3 days, I've covered 600 miles or more, traveling up and down this 7th front area, and the rout of the enemy has been disastrous and complete. Estimates suggest that the Germans lost over 60% of their equipment concentrated down here, and it's not hard to believe. On one 10-mile stretch not far from Zweibrücken, roughly 300 of his vehicles lay smoldering along the road, and all of them pointing in one direction, toward the Rhine River and temporary safety. Prisoners of war taken during the 11-day offensive now total upwards of 40,000 by the 7th alone. In some sectors, so many enemy troops have called it quits that the 7th Army is faced with something of a manpower problem. Not enough men to guard the thousands of prisoners in the bulging pens. One day I counted 30 truckloads of sullen-looking Jerrys, at least 1,500 of them, moving toward the rear, guarded by 5 MPs. But there was no fight left in that group of Germans. The road back, the road toward the rear, is also being traveled today by another army of men. They hug the mine-swept shoulders of the road, thousands of them. And the air they breathe is free, but churned by the dust of an incomprehensible number of U.S. Army vehicles. They're French and Poles and Russians and Mongolians, a heterogeneous mass of European civilization, and they're tramping back with their few possessions clutched under their arms or piled on makeshift wheelbarrows. Printed on the backs of their clothes are those hated letters KG, meaning Kriegsgefangen, prisoner of war. They're free men now, freed by the Americans, and as you go, they shout Viva les Americans. But where they're going, what they're going back to, no one knows. And here's a late report. Strong explosions have been heard in the west bank of the Rhine, about 15 miles south of Strasbourg. This is Ed Hawker on the Western Front, returning you to NBC in New York.
A dispatch from Moscow says that a Berlin broadcast said today that the Russians had launched an all-out offensive on the lower reaches of the Fron River in Slovakia at 4 o'clock yesterday morning. The focal point of what was described as the latest of the mighty Russian drives against the heart of the Reich was on the Hungarian-Slovak border. Now this morning we heard from NBC observers Pat Flaherty in Manila and Ed Hawker on the Western Front. Now here's your announcer, and then I'll be back with more news.
Last year, Victory Gardeners produced more than 40% of the nation's fresh vegetables. And President Roosevelt has appealed to all Americans to meet that same goal in 1945. That is, again, to produce 40% of the nation's fresh vegetables. First, because of the acute manpower shortage on the farms. And second, because our total food needs are increasing. And two, there's another reason why Victory Gardens are a good thing. The average American needs about 50% more green and yellow vegetables, and about 20% more tomatoes and citrus fruits than were available in 1944. And Victory Gardeners and their families are much more likely to get their share of these necessary foods than the average consumer. If you're going to have a garden this year, now's the time to plant it. You can get information by writing to Victory Gardens, Washington 25, D.C. And again, here's James Stevenson in the NBC newsroom.
And here's a bulletin from the 3rd American Army. Lieutenant General George S. Patton's forces are smashing on the great German industrial city of Frankfurt, and its capture appears only a few hours distant. Lieutenant General Ira C. Eaker, chief of the Mediterranean Allied Air Force, declared today that the German Air Force is virtually grounded. Amplifying his remark, he said, "Every day our pilots see a modern German fighting force parked on aerodromes for lack of fuel. They average 20 missions daily. We average more than 2,000. The Luftwaffe is virtually grounded, and I mean just that." Swedish press dispatches said today that Allied aircraft attacked a southbound German convoy in the Skagerrak off Sweden's western coast last night. Coastal observers were quoted as saying they saw one big explosion and a huge burst of fire. The Germans have been evacuating their troops from Norway, according to Swedish accounts. And that's the morning's news from around the world. This is James Stevenson in the NBC newsroom in New York saying goodbye, and I'll be seeing you tomorrow morning.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
I'm coming up at 1301
and I'm going to speak from east of the Rhine in the American Army's bridgehead. Here's another time check. It's 13 and 30 seconds. 13:00:30 coming up. Whoa. Now, I'll give you a 15-second time check, and then I'll begin broadcasting from east of the Rhine out to Tokyo. Here's a 15-second time check coming up. Whoa. John McVane in Germany. This NBC broadcast is the first broadcast from east of the Rhine. I'm speaking to you from a mountaintop in the 1st U.S. Army bridgehead. My voice is being sent from the famous Army mobile transmitter, Jig Easy Sugar Queen, with which NBC made the first broadcast from Germany. It's going to London, and more is relayed to the NBC from New York. Far below and behind me is the Rhine. It winds through high hills and bluffs. From this pinnacle, it looks tiny, a silver serpent. It's our river now. In front of me are other hills. Last night up here, you could still hear the faint rattle of machine guns in the distance. Today, all is quiet. Miles below us, farther east, our tanks and infantry are plunging into the heart of Germany. Great armored fists have been thrust through the remnants of German resistance. The American 1st Army, like the 3rd Army farther south, the 9th and the British farther north, is racing today toward Germany's vital spot. Only at scattered points in this territory that stretches below me are the Germans putting up a fight. All along the front, divisions are reporting resistance light or non-existent. Yesterday, there was still some heavy fighting, but the great offensive of the 1st Army could not be stopped. The Germans became disorganized. At some points on the 9th Army front, Volkssturm, the German Home Guard outfit, threw away their weapons and surrendered. The German divisions that might have fought us here fought and were broken on the other side of that silver stream I can see down there. Now we're on this side in a mighty force. As the 3rd Army drives in the area south of Frankfurt, the 1st Army has launched itself eastward. Now you're going to see a very fine race for the honor of joining with the Russian forces of Marshal Zhukov. Marshal Kobukin. I'd personally risk a bet on the 1st Army, but General Patton in any race is a very dark horse. This is John McVane returning you from a mountaintop east of the Rhine to the NBC newsroom in New York.
Okay, that's it, MCM3. I will stand by.
Okay, Bob? Hello, New York. Hello, Bob. Hello, Robert. Hello, New York. Oh, don't say you didn't get it. Hello, New York. Hello, NBC New York. Hello, Bob. Hello, Bob.
Oh.
Hello, Bob. Oh, you are still there. Good. I thought you hadn't got it.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? Very good piece and very good reception. What was it like your end?